Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, March 5th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO at Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. We have some headlines first. We are going to be speaking to Noel Hanrahan about an interesting development in the Justice Department, always a fascinating tunnel to go spelunking down. And we also are going to try to reach Medea Benjamin, who was recently roughed up, along with other Code Pink members, attempting to journey from Egypt to Gaza for a celebration of International Women's Day. What better way to celebrate International Women's Day than be being roughed up by state police in Egypt and on one's journey to Gaza, one of the most locked down places in the world, a place where there are no bomb shelters, but there are plenty of bombs coming in. Israel has no problem dropping bombs, firing missiles at a civilian population that has nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. People do not have basements where they can go and congregate when they hear those inevitable whistling sounds. So that said, on with a few headlines from around Cascadia, and then we'll get on to our guests. An arbitrator has ordered longshoremen back to the Port of Portland after a walkout in support of Honduran dock workers. How great is that? I mean, if you want anything to boost your spirits, that the fact that our longshoremen here walked out in support of other West Coast dock workers, that should do it for you. The longshore union says a review requested by Governor Kitzhaber of Port of Portland cargo operations will be tainted. In Honduras, military responded to protests there by invading the port and arresting approximately 130 workers who were charged with, get this, terrorism and damaging the national economy. What national economy? The only reason that the very, very wealthy are that way is because of the wealth created by the dock workers. The ILWU release said that one union leader has had to flee the country after his family members were attacked. One of his family members was, it is said, is written that was even killed, and other people were injured. At the Port of Portland's Terminal 6 is one of four industrial marine terminals. Port officials say that they won't allow oil train projects to be developed until safety risks are addressed. And America's deep Puritan seam asserts that medicine that make you feel well are okay, but medicine that makes you feel good are not okay. So in other words, if somebody had heart medicine or diabetes medicine, or if they were sitting there and hooked up to a dialysis machine and they were feeling vaguely high, that would be it. No more medicine for them. The only reason that those types of treatments are okay or are legal are because they're so insanely overpriced. People are being milked by pharmaceutical companies for billions and billions of dollars, and of course. The pharmaceutical companies can get away with it because most of this stuff makes people feel worse. Under Senate Bill 1531, local governments would have to decide by May 1st of this year whether to enact certain bans on medical marijuana dispensaries, allow cities and counties to ban these facilities until May 1st. If they don't ban them, they could still set policies for when such facilities could be open, and regulations of that sort. So in other words, they're regulating the business of medical marijuana to pieces, just of course as they do with other types of medicine that in some cases will make people feel slightly high. Those two, heavy regulation. And on the subject, Whitman's International Women's Day coming up. Medea Benjamin was hospitalized. She was deported. Her shoulder was dislocated during a journey from Egypt to Gaza for the event. I don't know about other people out there. Myself, I don't celebrate Women's Day. I think that women are, as a class, political prisoners everywhere. It's the only out in the open, walking, wounded prison population in the world. And it's though it is frowned upon to use derogatory language describing other groups of people, women who are no longer, let's just call it, in their childbearing years, when they're fertile, little hips swaying in the breeze. If you're past that age, it's okay for people to make fun of you. The most liberal people can make fun of you. You can be denied services. You can be denied employment. It's the only people in the world where that's permitted to indulge and engage in those sorts of entertainment. And the weather for around Cascadia, mostly cloudy today, obviously, lows around 44, south wind 5 to 13, though that could gust a lot higher by the time the day is over. Let me just take a look here for the rest of our weather for today. We have rain in store for tonight, for today, excuse me. Highs near 56, it will be breezy, 26 to 28 in outlying areas, gusting up to 41, and chance of precipitation 100%. Tonight, rain lows around 53, south wind 29 to 33, gusting up to 50 miles per hour. For tomorrow, Thursday, showers, and we could get some thunderstorm activity. Highs near 54, breezy as hell, with southwest winds 23 to 32 miles per hour, gusting up to, whew, get this, 48. For tomorrow night, showers, and again, the National Weather Service holds out the possibility of a thunderstorm here or there. Otherwise, rain, lows around 49, and of course, extremely breezy. We have a still waxing crescent moon, 5 days old, and more on the story of the of what the alternative farm community is doing, which touches all of us. The moon touches all of us, and the activities of people who grow things according to the cycles of the moon touch all of us in ways that we find difficult to understand or predict right now, but paying attention to them is about the best that we can actually do. We're still trying to reach Noel Hanrahan with the prison project, because there are developments there. As many of us in the activist community were sad to hear, Mumia Abu-Jamal, there was good news and bad news a while back. The upshot, of course, is that he is going to be, according to a judge's decision, he will be in prison for the rest of his life, and there is nothing that anyone can do about that. Such was the deal that they arrived at. But there are always cracks in the system, and one of these is that the Senate has proposed a key vote on Monday on the controversial nominee. We began to talk about this yesterday, to head the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department. Supporters of nominee Debo Ajabile would have needed a simple majority of 51 votes on Monday to clear the way for final vote, but the procedural vote was cancelled. The vote was rescheduled, and what Noel Hanrahan, we're still hoping to speak with her so she can talk a little bit to the issue herself. As a private investigator and journalist herself based in Philadelphia, where Mumia Abu-Jamal's original incident took place, Hanrahan is the director of Prison Radio, and she edited Mumia Abu-Jamal's book All Things Censored. For years, he's produced his recordings from death row, and from prison. He's no longer on death row, but he's certainly in prison. More recently, she helped produce the documentary Long Distance Revolutionary. So today, the stage is the floor of the U.S. Senate, where a closure vote on Adjabili's nomination takes place. Adjabili is very pro Mumia, so it's not really the weather that's holding up these votes, is my guess. I think it's probably more like the weather inside Mumia Abu Jamal's prison cell. According to an op-ed in no less than Wall Street Journal, Adjabili's representation of Mumia when he headed the NAACP Legal Defense Fund is reason enough to derail his nomination. The Fraternal Order of Police, Fox News, and the bipartisan derision of Pennsylvania Senators Pat Toomey and Bob Casey has fueled this impending drama. We're out of time now. A lot more to talk about there. And also we're trying to reach Medea Benjamin to ask her how she's doing and get a report from Gaza and field a few remarks on the significance of International Women's Day 2014. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, March 5th, 2014. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, the situation remains tense in the Ukraine. We'll feature an in-depth discussion with a former high-level CIA analyst. Also, right-wing police groups try and scuttle an Obama Justice Department nominee because of an alleged connection to Mumia Abu-Jamal. Palestinians stranded in refugee camps in Syria facing extreme life-and-death conditions as Israel's prime minister heads to cut a deal with Jerry Brown and movers and shakers in Silicon Valley. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. Joining us to talk about really some reality, what's going on the ground and what this means is Ray McGovern. McGovern is a former high-level CIA analyst and a friend to the show. Ray McGovern, welcome back to Flashpoints. There is a lot of discussion and a lot of one-sided reporting. You want to maybe set the scene of what this looks like to you now, somebody with extraordinary experience in the region.
Well, Dennis, the biggest phenomenon that sort of strikes me right between the eyes is that there's a big, bad guy with a black hat here, and his name is Putin. And what he's done, now hang on to your hat, he's violated international law by invading another country. Yeah, it used to belong to Russia and the Soviet Union, but nonetheless, the Crimea, he invaded another country, and that is completely beyond the pale. The United States, of course, would never do such a thing. We decided that it would be much better to isolate the Russians, to move NATO up right to their frontier. And now, in 2014, to threaten to pull a constituent republic from the old Soviet Union, namely the Ukraine, we call it Ukraine now, pull that into NATO. And that's what did it. It was very ill-disguised. We tried to do that to Georgia. That didn't work. And the Russians came down very hard on us there a couple of years ago, as if to say, look, don't pull this stuff, and especially don't pull it on the Ukraine. Next thing you know, we have people like Nuland in the State Department, like this fellow Pyat from the ambassador there in Kiev, orchestrating the overthrow of the government in Kiev, and even naming who the best guys would be to be the interim prime minister. Yats is the guy's name, Yatsenyuk. That intercepted conversation speaks volumes. And there's no need to surmise or to say, well, maybe the U.S. played a role in this. There they are planning this post-coup world, and that's the world we're in now. What people should have warned the president and others is that, look, you know, Gorbachev is gone. What you have now is a hard-nosed guy like Putin. He's not going to stand still for this. he's not going to abide this kind of thing right on his doorstep. So, you know, if you do this, beware. You're going to pay a price for this. And you know what? In the end, it's not going to work because Putin has all the high cards.
Right, so, let me just interrupt here. I want to ask you, who do you believe is the legitimate current leader of the country, of the Ukraine? Who's in charge? Who should be? Is it a coup? Clearly, is the leader of the country forced into another country, into Russia? Say a little bit more about that.
So there are a whole bunch of people in the Western Ukraine that saw this this very unpopular government, and the reeks of corruption. It is very unpopular. They saw that as an opportunity to overthrow it, to replace it by somebody much more conducive to what? Well, to what they want. And what they want is a very close relationship with the EC and with NATO. And they really don't care much about what happens to the Ukrainian people, because to do that, the IMF and the other Wall Street folks are going to insist on the kind of austerity that we see now in Greece and on the basket case economies. So they don't really care about that because they're safe. They get the money off the top. But that was what was at stake here at the end of the year, when it looked like the EC wanted to offer the kinds of inducements and sort of compel the head of the Ukraine to go ahead and join with the EC, and eventually, as night follows the day, with NATO. Now, that's when the Russians stepped in and said, look, you know, we know that you've been sort of beguiled by this, but if you won't see the economic realities here, well, here's $15 billion we'll give you, and we'll continue to subsidize the natural gas that keeps you afloat. What that subsidy, Dennis, amounts to about a third of the cost of natural gas that the Ukraine depends on. Now, that seemed to right things, and the Ukrainians mostly sort of understood that, well, okay, maybe that's the better deal. But that's when all hell broke loose, because the folks that wanted this other deal with the West took to the streets,